Well, it was a great honor to be invited to read with Michael Worster. Michael, as you know, as everyone in the room knows, is the author of three poetry titles, The Cruelty of the Desert, Snake Charmer's Daughter, and more recently, The British Detective. He also, with his accomplice Judy, put out the anthology celebrating the 250th birthday of the city of Pittsburgh. He's a founder of the entire literary scene in the city of Pittsburgh and was the very first poet in Pittsburgh I met back in 1969, more or less on the eve of my departure for Canada. But perhaps more important than these things, because lots of people edit anthologies and lots of people publish poetry books and lots of people lead poetry workshops and so on, Michael Worster is easily one of the 10 greatest living American poets. It's a tremendous honor to even know a writer of his stature. And it's my pleasure to introduce Michael Worster.
See.
That's not bad.
Do we need to adjust the mic? I don't think we do. My right leg went haywire on me today, but I'm sure it'll be okay. James, thank you for that wonderful introduction. I appreciate that. The first poem by James Deal that I remember ever reading was a poem in which the Sullivan sisters washed themselves at the kitchen sink. And I'm pleased to see that Judy Sullivan, one of the Sullivan sisters, is with us tonight. That's great. It just shows that time, we all stay together over time. As James said, we met in 1969, shortly before he emigrated to Canada. The first poem I'm going to read is a poem that I wrote on a sun porch at 1150 Greenfield Avenue in 1982. It's called Poem Ending with a Line by Deal. Kathy, I put you in this poem. Wearing white with flowers around the yoke. You do incidental things, carry water, place an old helmet and a broken sword on an outdoor table, singing. You are a native here in this poem, like the sheep coming in the meadow gate, the solitary hawk, those red cliffs in the lost horns call. And since we're here on this facing page from that poem, and you know, how can we get together with James Deal and not read a poem that mentions Dieter Wislowski? Here's a poem called The Boats. For those newcomers to Pittsburgh poetry, Dieter at one time was the bad boy of Pittsburgh poetry. The Boats. This poem is for Shelley and for Kathy and for O'Rourke's. This poem is for all the children who lost their way and for those of us who survived. It begins with an epigraph from Dieter Wislowski. The seagulls and the boats live in harmony. The seagulls are white, and the boats emit horrible screams. It is New York, January 1963, the Figaro. We drink coffee, teas, eat pastries. The snow falls for hours. You are trying to call Jody, who committed suicide on Friday. When we leave, we find P.L., sitting on the curb, his feet in the gutter, eating the filthiest sandwich I have ever seen. Thank you. I read that once, and the woman said, I know P.L. He's my brother-in-law. And she later studied poetry with me at the Center for the Arts. Before we finish with this book, I'll read the title poem, The Cruelty of the Desert. It's alive with small creatures, if you can see them. The woman you are with has been crazy for years. And if you look up at the rocks, you'll see your own brother's face staring down. I have books and stuff for sale over there. James apparently was unable to get his books from the car to the Hemingway's because of the storm, but I'm hoping that you folks will follow him to his car, because this guy's a great poet, and Norma, as you can see, is terrific, and you got to follow him and get some of these titles from James and Norma. I'll read a few poems from The Snake Charmer's Daughter. This one is called Ghost Imprints. Ghost imprints left in the ash of a ruined civilization should be in whites, grays, half seen in a charcoal dust. There's a trick of the wind I've used in poems too many times. But on the French coast, the light. Clearly, you wore a blue band uniform trimmed in gold. Clearly, the sky became a deepening rose red. The sea, a type of cobalt blue. This one's a prose poem called After the Flooding. I was traveling on foot through a neighborhood near my own after the flooding. I was traveling with a small gray cat named Sappho. Sometimes she would walk beside me. Sometimes I would carry her. When she walked, she would move about, exploring, discovering things. We wound up entering a house and were there some time. Encountered one of two sisters just before we got away. One of the sisters had lost the use of her legs, but exhibited a sensuality that reminded of the flooding, such intense and lyric power. We were on the floor in the upstairs parlor when the other came in and caught us. She was pissed off. Negotiation. Why didn't the first philosopher want to go on living? They sat in a white room and discussed it, the facts of the palpable world, how she was moaning, the two of us in ecstasy on that parlor floor. These two sisters were blonde, I insist on it. The one without the use of her legs was fleshy. She may not have been a true blonde. Who stops to count? Sappho discoursed on these events from the maple tree outside. Here's one called Spirit Walker. This was in the Post-Gazette, and it has had a long shelf life. Different people read this poem differently, and I found that there are people who still carry copies of it around in their wallet or pocketbook. It's called Spirit Walker. No one dies, they become light. Look away in the evening. Look away as she goes by. They search in their own pasts for more shade. The sky pulls at them. She has a long and intricate name. She is distant and carries oceans in her heart. Then one more from this book, The Red Coach. The enemy whistles for the cat, imagines he is communicating in the language of crows. I turn to dirt, past the fallen desolation, the lonely pulsing of grandfather clocks at night. Wood scent, the blind pianist, his hands like a neighbor who helps with the furniture. The tongue is helpless. Blind men go to the bridge and the steel engine. We declare our innocence. I think of death, a red coach traveling toward a dark mountain. And a few poems from The British Detective. This one's called Election. My poems have become dangerous. My poems have holes sewn onto them. They surround the White House. They are the armies of the night. I am a peaceful man from Moline. My black pearls are the oysters in your Christmas stocking. You can see them on television. wait for the rusted trains where the poet's eye capsizes. I have a friend in a white suit. He wears a black diamond in his lapel. Under the sunken light, I build a poet in chains, the pull of the earth that the skydivers love. Cities are in flames. Whatever is left of memory, the old sorrow. This one's, thank you. This one's called Intimidated by the Breakage. No purple open, eyes alone, skin jumps. I should tell them. The foliage is covered with cloth during the night. No place like home to disturb the evidence. By mid-morning, a weak light tires the pictures. So because the poem I just read has the word breakage in the title, that made me think of the filmmaker Stan Brakhage, so I wrote this poem called Brakhage. Painstaking events in real time. Creeley crossing his legs. Proclamations from darkness, order, the meaning of the hand. The hand reminding in the pasture. The hand without a crack on the shelf. The hand in the garden of practice, charged and shimmering. I love to watch you walk across the room, your clothing, white or black, the motif of rain. What happened was Brakhage spent a year in Pittsburgh with Cyril Wecht at the morgue making a film. And when it had its premiere at Filmmakers, the old place here in Oakland, Brakhage couldn't come for the premiere, so Robert Creeley, the poet, came down from Buffalo. And he introduced the film and talked about it and kept crossing and recrossing his legs. So that's how he got in the poem. One more poem in this book, and here's the poem that I wrote for the first Bush inaugural, Bush the Son, poem about America. In Clinton, Iowa, on the Mississippi, there's a small ballpark, Riverfront Park. The team is called the Pilots. The home run balls go into the water and down to New Orleans. Thank you. So we'll read some newer work. Identifying Nebraska. They all kissed the bride, begins a story in a sex magazine, product of sweaty hands in a spiral notebook in a small town of a prairie state. I was surprised to learn the Oregon Trail went through Nebraska. Always thought of it, the trail as further north of Nebraska, or Nebraska as further south. I remember the famous sand hills. How I'd like to go back there. Buffalo Bills, home for old cowboys. Now this next poem, I always explain is not an anti-Catholic poem, but it's about some folks that I hung out with when I was a teenager, a young guy, and I was always amazed at the paradox between their behavior on Saturday night and the fact that they never missed Mass. And the thing that I found, the only flaw I found in that wonderful movie, The Town, was that you didn't see these guys, these hoodlums going to church, and they certainly would have. But anyway, this poem's called Good Catholic Boys. Traveling with Patty Davenport was fun. His size gave him the element of surprise. Mooney and Dougherty enjoyed cleaning out a bar in one of the ethnic neighborhoods on a Saturday night. Patty did it the following Saturday all alone. All 5 feet four of him. Hugh McElroy tore a man's head off, twisted it right off. No one was more surprised than Hugh. When he got out of prison a couple years later, he still had that choir boy smile and those twinkling blue eyes, but he didn't want to fight anymore. I was in court with Jimmy Burnshaw when the judge told him one more arrest for fighting and he would do time, but they were always at Mass on Sunday morning. It's a poem called 30 Seconds. A sonic boom, invisible bells. By the side of the road, a man with a funny beard sticking out and a penny placed on his forehead. Chimes in the doorway awaken the fugitive heart. A simple, quiet room. The moon through the window. Now, some of these poems, as you may have guessed, are fiction. And some poems are not fiction. They're absolutely factual. And sometimes I tell you ahead of time, well, this one's really factual. And it is. I have a poem of probably, I think I have a poem about my brother that's factual, but I have several about a brother that are made up. But this poem is real. It's called My Dad. He was 5'9 and very muscular, an alternate to the Olympics in swimming and in wrestling. After college, he wrestled professionally for a while. That was before wrestling became entertainment and stopped being a sport. I guess real wrestling was too boring. All his life, he had trouble containing his rage. The Big Lottery. Day after day, the fisherman throws out his nets. I finally stopped playing the Big Lottery because it never hit. But I still check the numbers in the paper every day. The coin. Cold drops on the telephone wires. Shuttered windows don't stop the penetration of the psyche. When the councilman found out the city owned all those artworks, he arranged for them to be sold off, but at prices much less than they were worth. The man who lives there is battered. Europe is lost, just cinders in the barbecue, engines shut off under a strange constellation. I drove through a different town and buried something on the other side. In this universe, the coin always lands on its edge. I keep track of the time. This one's called The Man. He had walked in from another poem, ridiculous in his green suit, with a yellow butterfly in his hand instead of a flower. It's one called Atom, A-T-O-M. Birds flap prescient wings. The sky grows wings and ghost shadows. Swinging silhouettes metaphor pain, picked clean to the bone by scavengers. Out of focus one day, packed full of two-day-old nonsense the next. He thrashes and rolls, afflicted by piranhas and sharks. Here, out of the rain, out of the flame, we are alive. One by one, we are slid into envelopes, like giant crow wings in the wind. Poets. A scorcher of a day at cooling end. The yellow jackets had contested with us for the mulberries. If the poets shed their ragged garb, would the evening breeze call back their words? Now, this is another one. This is absolutely factual. And nobody can understand it, but I'm going to read it, and I hope you enjoy it. It's called The Incarceration. We saw them, Tony and Norris, walking across the lawn in the bright sunlight. Norris looked up and saw Ed and me looking down at them from the high window. He was convulsed with laughter and started rolling around on the ground. This was so odd, so beyond their ken, that the tomato pickers returning for lunch were afraid to pass. Never seen anything like that before. This is called Return Home. It's my version of the conclusion of the Odyssey. Return Home. First the islands, then the beautiful hills. Near the front gate, a wooden bucket. At night, frogs shiver in the mud bank. We turn our backs to each other and fall asleep. When you get old, nothing works quite as well. Let me read this poem about Jack. And I make a reference to my reading in Hemingway's. This was a prior reading. I don't know how many of you remember Jack Wolford. That's Jack. I'm thinking about Jack, about starting my reading at Hemingway's with his Pall Mall Dune, explaining it's my favorite poem in the anthology, the only one of its kind. Jack was a great Pittsburgh poet. If you ever go to Pittsburgh Poetry Valhalla and a big burly guy gives you a hard time, you'll doubt your right to be there. That's Jack. Now, of course, we all mourn for the past. Here's a poem called Dan Vito. I ran into Dan Vito at the post office. We walked out to the street talking about the South Side and the changes and the parking. Later, I stopped by David Oster's to pick up my tax return. I was talking with Tony about seeing Dan and for some reason telling her about feeling sentimental about the old days and Saka and missing Al and Charlie. My eyes were misting over. I had to get out of there. I moved to Southside first in 1982, and many of the changes have not been for the best. When I moved there, it was arts, crafts, and antiques. Now it's beer. Anyway, I want to just to say a couple things before I read a last poem. I have two books for sale, plus the CD, which features the Cap Gun Quartet, with two poets, myself and Romella Kitchens, reading our poems with jazz. I also have the DVD that Ruth Ella Hendricks did, which is an interview and readings. So they're all over there, and I'm serious about tracking Jim and Norma down and buying books off their car, because I hope the rain has stopped, because his work is just terrific, and Norma's is terrific too. Also, one other thing we've talked about. When we're done here after the open mic, we'll turn this place over to the kids and the sports fans, and some of us are going up to Galifty's for a late supper. We'll talk about poetry and baseball or whatever, so anybody who wants to go up and hang out with us, that's Galifty's up in Squirrel Hill, but we won't be going there till after the open mic. I'm going to close with a new poem called The Gift. Sarah gave me a beautiful gift, a bowl, maybe a type of basket, dark wood. The upper part seemed braided or had a braid design. The lid was topped by a frog. From Indonesia? In my thank you note, I told her I would be very sensitive as to what I placed in her gift. On the outside back of the envelope, I printed, in quotation marks, a pigeon feather, a marble. Thank you very much.